Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied.
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Frank Lee, it's over.
What's up? Welcome back to Play Test. It is episode 228. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. You know the drill. Find us on YouTube on WEEI's channel. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos. They can be found in the Play Test playlist there. And find us on the socials at Play Test on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Here with Sammy, here with Pat. It's Gordo. Sox dropped 2 of 3 to the Giants, which when you trade Rafael Devers to the team you're about to play, reasonable chance you're going to drop that series. Kind of stinks that, you know, they got that first game and you felt like, hey, like good chance that we're going to get out of here with a fifth straight series win. You know, Sox have been playing some of their best ball of the season, probably their best ball of the season, to be honest with you. And they, you know, a really, really entertaining first game if you stayed up for it 10-15 start time. But start to finish, I mean, just pure cinema in that game, start to finish. And then the second game and the third game was just kind of the same, not the same, but just some of the problems that have plagued the Red Sox for years. And, you know, certainly early on in the season with the defense, you know, it came back to haunt them. You can't play that way against a team like the Giants, a team with a lockdown bullpen and just an overall winning ball club. You can't give them runs, can't give away extra outs and innings. And they did that. So yeah, if you want Devers conversation, we're going to do that too. If you're sick of the Devers stuff and you want to talk ball, you want to talk the series, like we'll get there first. We'll talk the series, talk the state of the team, give the vibe check, and then probably get to the Devers stuff in the back half. I know a lot of people are sick of it, but like, let's be honest with you. Like, it's probably the biggest Red Sox storyline since they traded Mookie Betts. So it's going to be talked about. They just played the guy. Like, if you're sick of the storyline, I'm sorry. I mean, it's probably going to be something that's talked about at minimum on and off for the next several years. So get used to it. But we can start with the series. I mean, we're recording this super soon after the third game, which they, I know the umps stink, but they gave that game away. I mean, the defense just multiple times throughout the game, you can't give a team like the Giants a chance to score a lot of runs, and they cashed in on multiple multi-run innings off of errors, and that just can't happen.
Yeah, the Giants are a really fundamentally sound team. It's kind of always how San Francisco teams are. They play good defense. Like you said, bullpen is locked down, so giving away outs to a team like that, especially when they don't have a great offense and you could win those games, very frustrating. I don't know how upset I can be. They've won the last 4 series, the first series they've lost in a long time. So frustrating, yes. Hopefully the type of series that you kind of just turn the page on, play cleaner baseball next time, and go off to Anaheim. You're facing a below average Angels team that you should be able to take at least 2 out of 3 from. Weren't able to last time, but team is still hot. I think it's fair to say they've won a lot of series lately. I feel still vibe wise, I feel pretty good, not as good as I did heading into the series. Would have been great to win the series after all that happened with Devers. By the way, I know I told you guys now, I don't call him Raffy anymore. He's just Devers. He's just another player now, no longer Red Sox. He's just Devers. So yeah. Luckily, Devers wasn't like killing them all series. He had the big home run in game 2. Other than that, a walk, a single, whatever. So not a ton else to add to that. Frustrating, ugly baseball. Play better next time.
Definitely would have been worse if Raffy just kicked there. Like, you know, if Raffy just kicked butt all weekend and, you know, 3 home runs and 2 doubles and just whooped you. Like, yeah, it could have been worse, but
he was okay. He wasn't bad. He just wasn't.
He won them a game directly. Like, that wasn't great, but you also gave that to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, but how'd that second run get?
Right.
More errors, errors. It's second base, man. No matter who they put there, Hamilton, Romy, Campbell, nobody's taking to second base, which is something we should eventually get into.
I mean, it sucks, right? You had the chance, not even the chance. You should have won five straight series. You should have taken at least two out of three in San Francisco, riding high into the Angels series. You shoot yourself in the foot a bunch over the last 2 days, and it comes back and bites you. It happens. I said about whatever it was, a little over two weeks ago, right after the third game of the first Yankee series, I said they need to win 10 out of 15 for me to buy back in. They did exactly that. And yes,
are we at that 15 game marker right now? We're here.
That's wild. Here. I didn't even realize that till you just said it. We talked about that a few times, and I totally went over my head.
Yep. They
3 days ago.
Yeah, they won two out of three against the Yankees, two out of three against the Rays, three against the Yankees, two out of three against the Mariners, and one out of three against the Giants. That is 10-5 in 15 games. And worth noting, the schedule coming up, knock on wood, is a bit of a cakewalk for the most part. It's the Angels, the Blue Jays, the Reds, the Nats, the Rockies. So that's another stretch where you should go 10-5. That being said, this series sucked. Overall, I still feel pretty good. They're playing fine baseball. As of Friday, they were playing good baseball. The offense is still kind of keeping a roll, even without Raffy, which is encouraging. Roman's starting to hit. Marcelo's getting comfortable. Things are still trending in the right directions.
Rafaela. We'll talk about that, too. He was awesome, but keep going.
Sidon was incredible. Everyone, Toro has stayed hot. Narvaez has stayed hot. And it's just the ball is still rolling here. There's still momentum. It's a series loss. They happen. They were going to win every series the rest of the way.
Yeah.
That being said, overall feel really good. Sucks the result in San Francisco.
So this is something I forget if – so Sammy and Joe and I went to Worcester today. And I forget, Sammy, if we talked about this on the drive or if we were texting about – I don't know when this came up. But we talked about how eerily similar – Pat, you bring up the schedule and you talk about – the All-Star break, they've got three with the Angels, three with the Blue Jays at home, three with the Reds at home, three with the Nationals on the road, three with the Rockies at home, four with the Rays at home. All right, so leading up to the All-Star break, what was that, 19 games I just rattled off right there? None of them super scary. I know this team has kind of beaten the good teams and lost to the bad teams, so I don't know how much you want to, how much weight you want to put on that. But I was talking about it with Sammy at one point about how eerily similar this year has felt from the Red Sox and Yankees perspective to past years, where it seems like the Red Sox kind of look like they're in for a season of shit and there's reason to believe shit, it may not turn around. And then right when you're ready to give up, they go on a big run in June and early July. And with that schedule, they could do that. And then the All-Star break is kind of where it changes. And last year was the epitome of that. They took two out of three from the Royals, who they were neck and neck with in the wild card race right before the All-Star break last year. We were riding high. And then right after the All-Star break, that's when you lose the bullpen. They blow a bunch of games with like Zach Kelly and other guys you wouldn't want to be trusting in the ninth inning against the Dodgers and the Rockies and one other series in there. Or there was a Yankee series too. And then the season fell apart. And then with the Yankees, they always start off red hot and then they get a little cold and then they kind of level out at the end. And it kind of feels like the Red Sox are headed in that exact direction right now, which is why I don't want to get too high. I know, it's hard not to because I know they've and obviously coming off a series loss, I'm not going to get too high. They just lost a series. But like even if they'd closed out today's game and won, like I was going to reference this as like, oh my God, we might be headed for the same script, because let's talk about following the All-Star break for the Red Sox. Oof. On the road, three with the Cubs. On the road, three with the Phillies. At home, three with the Dodgers. On the road, three with the Twins. At home, three with the Astros. At home, three with the Royals. On the road, three with the Padres. On the road, three with the Astros. Like,
what?
Yeah, so, like, could you not see this season going exactly how the last – like, they could go be red hot, go into the All-Star break, have, like, a 3.5 game lead on a playoff spot. You see the gauntlet coming, but you're like, we're 3.5 up. Like, we have some wiggle room. And they've beaten good teams. Like, you sell yourself, and then bang. So, like, I'm trying not to get too hot right now. You got to take it one series at a time, whether you're on the team or whether you're a fan of the team or whatever. Like, they just got to win these things one series at a time. And today, this series wasn't the series they won. They didn't get swept. They didn't play good fundamental baseball. But, you know, we talked about the offense not scoring four runs for the longest time. They scored more than four runs twice in the series. So that's a positive, I guess. And they're getting guys back. William Abreu was back this series. Alex Bregman continues to not tell us exactly when he's going to be back, but he's being all cryptic about it, which makes me – and he definitely hopes to be back before the All-Star break. So it can't be that long. So get that guy back. Yoshida at some point you think is going to be back. And the trade deadline, hopefully they'll stay in it. Like, we're going to have a trade deadline who says no kind of primer episode coming for you guys in a couple of days. But it's really about getting to that point, to the All-Star break, in a good spot so that you can have a few bumps in the road, add at the trade deadline, and then get to the finish line that way.
So, not to be ominous, but I just pulled up their schedule from last year. They went on an eerily similar heater against good teams in the middle of June last year before they collapsed after the All-Star break.
It's every year, bro.
They won 2 out of 3 against the Phillies, 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, and then they swept Toronto and took a series against Cincinnati.
Pat, and that, they went from last year. Do you remember the conversations we were having? We were like, this is the exact same thing as the year before. Can we buy in?
Yes.
Same team every year.
The other thing too, again, eerily similar. They went into that first series of that stretch with the Phillies at 500. They were 33-33. At the end of that stretch, they were 6 games over .500.
There you go.
So if you're a person who gambles on baseball, the Red Sox are like free money because you know exactly what they're going to do every single year. It's the hot, like, start cold, get hot, kind of simmer down, then get cold again. And then the mystery part is at the end of the year. So a great team for gambling addicts.
It's just, you're going to have to, and like, credit to them for the stretch, Pat, 10-5, 10-5
right now. 10-5 and 15, yep.
As of this moment, they're 10-5 in their last 15.
So Pat's back in.
That's a good stretch. You should be in. They're a half game out of a playoff spot right now. And like, as long as this team isn't, you know, sinking ship, that's, you know, 4+ games out of a playoff spot, there's no reason to not be in on watching this team and being hopeful about this team. I'm not saying you should put your life savings on them making the playoffs, but it is a team worth watching unless they're a sinking ship that's 4+ out of the playoff race. So it's just going to be about how can this team be the best version of itself. And I think it really starts with just playing fundamental baseball.
Yeah, I mean, they got to figure out second base. Second base has been the big defensive issue. Obviously, Christian Campbell, not super experienced. He's played the bulk of the games there. He's no longer on the major league roster. And Hamilton, supposed to be your good defender at second base, he botched an easy play in the first game of the series.
You feel almost confident with him there?
I feel good, not great with Hamilton there. He's a good defensive, like, all the metrics back it up, but I feel like the vibe does not back it up, if that makes sense.
Well, people hate the guy. And, like, to be honest with you, I think he gets more hate than is deserved. I get this series was, I mean, he had the huge home run and that was awesome. But defensively, yeah, he crushed it. Defensively, certainly not his best series, but I'm higher on Hamilton than most because he typically at second base plays really good defense and he's an elite base runner and he's capable of going on runs offensively when he plays every day. I'm not saying he should play every day, but that's a guy who can give you value. And yes. I think people kind of, and I know his numbers this year offensively are really bad, but it's not like Blake Sable, you know.
He's a good bench player. He does a little bit of everything, like you just said. Speed, the defense right now, he's 62nd percentile outs above average, but that kind of also includes a shortstop defense. So overall, he's a little bit above average defensively. But I think second base, he's a good defensive second baseman. He's not amazing. He's not Pedroia or Robinson Cano over there, but he's, you know, above average for sure.
It's funny because doesn't he feel like the opposite of Story? Like, Story visibly, like the eye test, you would think grades out much better defensively. And then Hamilton, you're like, oh, he's fine over there. He's average to above average, but like the metrics love him. Yeah. I feel like they're so flip-flopped. It's so strange. Because Story, we're to the point now where if a ball is hit to Story, it's a putout.
Yeah, he's played great defense for the better part of, what, 3 weeks now?
Like, yeah, something I'm was weird early in the season. Wasn't that weird early in the season? Like, it seemed like he was hurt or something. Story, like, his defense has, like, Hey, when do you see a guy in his mid-30s improve defensively mid-season? Just kind of strange. But
one thing, too,
let's see it.
One thing, too, his story is his, don't get me wrong, his arm strength is not a strong suit of his, but he's throwing with much more confidence. Remember early in the year, we were saying he was kind of like short-arming a lot of it?
Yeah, it was
like
weird.
He was coming out of the hand weird. Yeah.
Like he's guiding the ball, you know, and like, just weird looking.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you though, the second base conversation, because Sammy, you bring it up, and I think it's a good one because, I mean, we talk about Bregman and Yoshida coming back and possibly a trade deadline ad. I don't think this kind of revolving platoon door or whatever you want to call it, they've got at second base right now, whether it be, like, I guess it kind of looks like a Hamilton Romy platoon or something right now. I don't think that that is the long-term play here, because when Bregman comes back, I don't think they're going to send Marcelo Meyer down. I think they're going to make Marcelo Meyer the second baseman. I think that's where this is headed. Yeah. I have full confidence in him to do it. He's kind of a savant with the glove, like one of the surest hand guys on the team, and he's a rookie.
So I don't have full confidence in Meyer at second. I would do the reverse. I would put Trevor Story at second base and Meyer at short. Here's my reasoning. First of all, very, very tired of seeing the Red Sox play their young guys out of position. That is like, I think everyone agrees, despite Meyer playing a very good third base, it's really tiring to see Roman in right field instead of left field, Christian Campbell all over the field, blah, 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 blah. Tired of that. Point number two, Marcelo Meyer has played, 10 games at second base as a professional in the minors. He made 3 errors, whereas he's a good defensive shortstop. We know that. That's his main position. Trevor Story, on the other hand, 2022, played second base all year long and had 97th percentile outs above average. So you want a culture change? Just ship Rafael Devers out of town, wasn't being a team player. Trevor Story, you're the veteran in the clubhouse right now. Be a leader. Move over to second base. Marcelo, you're the new shortstop now and for the next, hopefully, 10, 15 years. Alignment. That's the alignment that I like. Craig Breslow, alignment Sox. That said, I don't think it's the end of the world if Marcelo plays second. It's just very much not my preference. I would like Marcelo at short, Trevor Story at second, and I think that's your long-term alignment. Again, using the word alignment. So that's how I feel.
Let me preface this by saying Marcelo Meyer unequivocally is the long-term shortstop of this team and my shortstop of the future without question.
Yes.
I don't think you can move one of the leaders of this team off of shortstop when he's playing his best defense of the year and when he is perfectly fine offensively. It's got to be around a high 700s, maybe 800 OPS for the last 3 or so weeks. Like, I just, to be honest with you, Sammy, I think that the defense is probably the same either way because I have pretty high confidence in both of those guys to play both spots. I mean, you say Meyer's only played 10 games in the majors as a pro at second base. Trevor Story hasn't touched the position even in practice since 2021 or 2022. So
is this the scenario that he was in when he played 97th percentile outs above average?
I mean, he had spring training. Well, so like, I mean, I think and Marcelo has been playing the position since spring training and is a rookie. And to be honest with you, like the messaging should be you got to earn your keep in this league. Like that's the messaging that they should send. And I think Marcelo is the shortstop of the future of this team. And if Trevor Story struggles defensively or goes back into a rut offensively where maybe you want to remove him from the lineup overall, then by all means, like Marcelo Meyer is a shortstop. But to me, if Story's playing defense the way he is and he's hitting enough to stay in the lineup, like he's the shortstop.
But don't you think
Because by the way, I don't know if Trevor Story's going to be here next year. And even if he is, I'd probably make that change before opening day.
But don't you think that him moving to second is totally like in line with the opposite of the way Devers was acting? Like that would be, I feel like that's a great message to Marcelo. Like this, yeah. But it's a good message.
He moves over. Fully expect them to do it.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God. And I just feel like Trevor Story is not. I get what you're saying. Like he's playing his best defense and he's hitting. He shouldn't move over. His contract overall has been a disaster. The fact that the Red Sox have stuck with him and they haven't done something insane like dump the contract, which we know they're not afraid to do, you know, I think he should, and I think he would. I think he should be more than willing to move over to second base. I just think that's the best if you want the best overall defense, maybe Story struggles there for a week, but I doubt it would take him along. He's been playing every day too. Like he's cooking.
I don't think any of them would struggle.
The only one that scares me is Marcelo at second. It's just he's barely played there over the last however many years. Story had a full season there and he looked great. So I'm not saying Marcelo can't do it. Of course he can. I just don't know if that's the best alignment.
Well, two things, right? I think it's pretty similar to 2013. Like you're pretty obviously, everyone knew that Bogarts was the future shortstop, but he played third because Steven Drew was there and he's good defensively. So I think in that case, Marcelo goes to second. In the scenario that Marcelo does go to second, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he has played more second base than third base.
I think he has, but it's not third base being on the same side of the diamond.
Understandable. Understandable. Yeah. But I think he's
second
such
base
a,
might be more, it's tough because it's similar side of the diamond, but also second and short.
But like
Lou talked about this. Lou was talking about this. He said I believe Lou Maloney said that he thought going from short to second is tougher than going from short to third, simply because it's a very different throw, different side of the diamond. You're turning a double play backwards, it feels. So I don't know. Maybe it's probably different by the guy. And you know, who knows? Maybe Marcelo's like, it's easy. He probably is. It's probably what he would think.
Yeah, and I think Cora is big on like the subliminal messaging. Like he never answers questions, but he'll drop you like little like breadcrumbs that like lead to you to get to a conclusion. A couple weeks ago, when he said that Marcelo would be above average at any of the four infield spots, I think that was kind of tipping his hand that he's going to second when Bregman gets back.
That's a good point, Pat. That's a really good point. Because to be honest with you, I mean, Sammy, you said it earlier. They've stuck with Story through thick and very, when you say through thick and thin, thin is bad, right? Thick is good and thin is bad.
I've never thought about this. Thick and, I think it just means through a variety of things. I don't know. His labrum was quite thin when it snapped, yeah. And they stuck with him through that.
They stuck with Story through a lot of thin. And there have been situations that are far more thin. Like he's played way more thin than he's playing right now.
So you think he's more thin than thick?
I think overall throughout the contract, he has been more thin than thick.
We need Trevor to
Thick
him up.
Hold on. Is thick bad? Okay.
If you ask.
I don't know. I'm just going to assume thick and thin are both bad. And the contract has been both thick and thin, and they've stuck with him. So I for the whole contract, the last 3 weeks is probably in the top 10% of the games he's played, like in terms of production, it's probably been top 10% of his best games.
Top 10 thinnest games, yeah. This and then that big streak he had with Seattle and the White Sox in 22, yeah, where he just went off that and then this recent stretch. He, you can tell how Trevor Story's at bat is going to go like very early on. I don't know if you guys noticed this, like, the way he takes pitches or doesn't take pitches kind of will tell you like, okay, he's seeing this guy. Like it's so quick, much quicker than other guys. Kind of same with Christian Campbell. Felt the same way about him. Like, you know how his at-bat's going to go early on. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if that's thick or thin.
I just couldn't compose myself. I know the answer. It was, sorry.
Oh, please enlighten me, Pat. God.
Yeah. No. So think of it in regard to like through the thick of it. The thick of it is like the worst of it. So through thick and thin, like thick being bad, thin being like the good times.
Oh, crap. So, okay. Yeah. So there's been a lot of thick and not as much thin.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of thick.
There's been oodles and boodles of thick.
Just so it is just so thick.
Yeah. Trevor Story, just like molasses. That's what I always say.
Fucking thick, bro.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Before we get to the Devers stuff, because we do have to talk about the Rafael Devers playing against the Red Sox. Do we want to talk about Duran? Because I feel like people have started to kind of open their eyes to how, and this is myself included. I know he hasn't been playing well for most of the season, but I think a lot of us had hope that, you know, as the summer turned, not because I feel like the narrative that, oh, he was cold to start last year and then he got hot and that's kind of what he's doing this year. So he's going to get hot again. That was always kind of a weird narrative, but he's been a good player. He was a great player last year and he was a very good player the year before that. And I sort of hoped that the worst case scenario would be he would follow up last year with the 2023 version of him, which was still a really good player. And right now, I mean, he has a lower OPS than Seydon Rafaela. Like he's been their worst. Well, I shouldn't say worst, because like the third outfield, like Roman Anthony just got up. So it's not like he's definitely played worse this year than Rafaela, and he's definitely played worse this year than Willy Abreu. And Roman Anthony is Roman Anthony. He's going to play, and you're going to let him get going. And the metrics say he's going to get going. So where does that leave Duran? I don't know, because Duran is one of the leaders of your team. He's your leadoff hitter against righties. One of the catalysts of this team when they're at their best is when he's going. So I don't know exactly what you, like right now, the easy solution is you rotate the outfielders through the DH. But after that, after Yoshida comes back or after you get someone at the trade deadline, then what?
I would consider flipping Duran and Anthony in the lineup. Have Roman lead off. I just can't, like, we were talking about this in the car ride over to Worcester today, Gordo. I can't remember the last time Jaron Duran started off a game with like a nice like base hit or even like a walk. Like just get on. It's been
a while.
Someone who has stat head, we should all buy that. We should put all pitch in and buy that.
I would do that. Do you want to do that? I would do that.
I'm down. Let's get on it.
We'll talk about it. But yeah, man, I don't know.
Do you know how hard I have to work to calculate some of these stats without having that? Why do I not have that?
I don't know. Man, it's money. Time is money.
Yeah, I'm very stingy with my money.
So Duran, first of all, take every trade conversation that we've had on this show and throw it out the window because the narrative is different now. He just hasn't done – he really hasn't done anything well. I hate saying that. I like Jaron Duran. I like his story. I do. Last year, I thought it was stupid when people were calling him a leader. This year, I actually think he's kind of sort of stepping into that role a little bit more, especially with the departure of Devers. So it's weird because you don't want to kick a guy like that to the curb. But when you're not playing good, playing good defense, you're not hitting. And when you're getting on base, No, he made a mistake on Sunday. I don't want to nitpick, but he hasn't been stealing bases. You could tell the confidence in that is down. I don't know, man. It's tough. Cora's already dropped him in the lineup. I think that might be the move, at least until he gets going. I might do it against righties, man. I would.
I consider it. I'm not against that.
Yeah, maybe not yet. Maybe let him go through the Angels series. Do they face righties? Tomorrow is...
True, because the Angels had lefties last
time. They have a bomb on the mound tomorrow.
Kachakowicz?
Yeah, whatever his name is.
Conch shell.
He's got like a 5-3 ERA.
But they just saw Anderson and Kikuchi last, what, a week and a half ago? 2 weeks?
Yeah. Big Cooch. Doesn't Duran have good numbers off of Big Cooch? Let me see.
He might. But Sammy, one thing that you said that I do want to touch on is the idea of Roman leading off. And people, I think, are going to kind of back away from that. There's a reason that he let off in AAA. He has not really even hit major league pitching all that well yet. It's starting to come around. He gets on base so often. He works counts. He walks. When he puts the ball in play, he squares balls up. It's like he had the trickler today, but for the large majority, like when he hits the baseball, he hits it. Like everything you want out of a leadoff guy, Roman does. And sure, like if you're going back to, you know, the 90s when your best hitter or, you know, who should be your best hitter is going to hit 3 or 4. Sure. But look around the league. I mean, Acuna leads off with the Braves. Schwarber was leading off for the Phillies. Like there's plenty of guys out there who profile as like a more or less a 5-tool player or like a plus plus hitter who are now leading off. And I think Roman, OBP wise, like he's probably your best option outside of Duran right now. And I think it's a move you make pretty soon because he's starting to finally come around a little bit.
If Fuck it. Try it on Monday. Try it Monday night. Let's see it. I don't care. And you know what's great about Roman is you can stop switching the leadoff hitter lefty righty because he had. And I know it's AAA pitching.
I would lead off Ref Snyder, dude. That guy, get that guy as many at bats against the lefties as possible.
Two hole. Put him in the two hole. Come on, that's not that big of a difference. So, whatever. I don't hate that. I just really you need a catalyst at the top of the order, and I like Pat. That's a good shout, especially Schwarber. That was a really kind of novel concept that just came around the last 5 years or so, where the leadoff spot, it used to be, growing up back in my day, it used to be the leadoff spot was your fastest guy, then you have a contact guy second, your best hitter hits third, and then a power hitter fourth, and then another one fifth. Now it's like, put your best three or so hitters at the top of the lineup so they hit as much as possible, which, right. You know, pick which school of thought you subscribe to. I, for this Red Sox team right now, I think it's at least worth a try to put Roman Anthony, who conceivably should and will be one of your top three hitters on the roster for years to come, put him at the top of the order. Just see what happens. You're getting nothing from Duran right now, so it can't hurt, right?
And there's going to be some people who say, oh, well, How much have they talked about not wanting to put too much pressure on the rookies? Like, oh, now you're going to have them leading off games? Like, it's the ultimate pressure, I guess, but he's been hitting third. Like, it can't really...
Yeah, he doesn't give a fuck.
If he's hitting third, he can hit leadoff. And then the other thing, too, to your point about having the best hitters at the top, and it's not as much about the fast guy in the leadoff spot. Remember when Duran would get on first and Devers would hit second, and they would have Duran just sit there on first base and not move. Because they want to give Raffy the chance to hit a two-run homer. So it almost makes sense to have Duran after the meat of the order so that when he gets on, you want him to steal second so that the bottom of the order guys only need to hit a single.
I think it's the right move to not send him either. Like, what do you...
Yeah, what's, no, it right? is. But, that, with, but that's why Devers, it makes more sense to have a guy like Roman there, a guy who gets on base, but you're not necessarily wasting by not having him run.
Think, like, what would the... Against a righty, I think you would go, you could do Roman first. Who would you hit second?
So are we talking like tomorrow, or are we talking when Bregman gets back?
Yeah, because when Bregman's back, it's Bregman. Tomorrow.
Bregman 2? I kind of like that.
No, Bregman 2, absolutely. Bregman yeah.
for two, I love yeah. that. Okay, I love that. Yeah, but move him out of the three hole. Okay, until then, like tomorrow, Monday night. Listener, as you're listening right now, here's the lineup that I want to see. Roman, left field. Or DH, either one.
Narvaez?
I would go Willier second. Stack him. 1 and 2. And then you pinch hit with Ref Snyder late in the game when the Angels inevitably bring in a lefty. You poach. It's like you like entice them to bring in a lefty. And then whoop, Ref Snyder.
On yeah. One thing they've done it to, which they could go back to, is Toro at 2. Because you're kind of platoon proof at 2.
I don't hate that either. They've got. I'm trying to look at some of these lefties the Angels have. They've got. I mean, they've got Detmers, and he's been good.
So got you a could close against. What, got a save against the Red
while
Sox.
While you're looking, Gordo. While you're looking, let me go through this. So I would do Anthony. Then yeah, Toro. I like that, Pat. Toro. He could play
Willier.
First. Then Willier. Yep. Then Narvaez. You go Narvaez.
Marcelo.
Meyer. Yep. Meyer. Story. Third. Story. Yep. Who are we missing? I'm going to go Sedan. No. Duran, Sedan.
And then second base. Second base. Yeah.
Hamilton. I'd go Hamilton tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the Angels from the left side, they've got Detmers, who's been really good of late, and they've got Brock Burke, he's Brock Burke. So
he was good for a little bit on Texas. It's not scaring anyone. Whatever.
Yeah. So like I don't hate the idea. I don't think they're gonna do it. Like I think they're gonna give I think it was already such a big move for them to move Duran out of the leadoff spot against lefties. I think they're going to keep giving him that wiggle room. Not to mention that we've talked about Duran trade conversations a bunch. If you're showing lack of confidence in the guy by moving him down in the order, how are you going to convince a team to trade some of their best capital to get 3.5 years of the guy? Like he's been playing so badly that you almost have to table trade conversations because you're just not going to get the value that you would want from the guy. Like Sammy, you asked me at Polar Park today, would you trade him for Jeremiah Estrada straight up? And it's like, if the conversation is Duran for a reliever straight up, just keep the guy and sit there and hope that he rebuilds the value. Cause if you're not getting something game changing, then you should at least leave yourself the potential that Jaren Duran once again becomes that.
Well, wait, but at the same time, Gordo, I'm not saying you're wrong. This is the other way to look at that. If you're keeping him to rebuild his value and he's not performing, then like, what are you doing with Yoshida now? Now you have a potentially a better bat on the bench, or you're sitting Roman or Rafaela. It's like, you might just be better off with, and I fucking hate this, the flexibility that gives the Red Sox in this instance might be the move, but it's just so hard to punt on a guy that just had a top 10 MVP season a year ago. Baseball's impossible, man. This is the hardest sport in the world. We'll not even argue about that.
Maybe the move when Yoshida hasn't even started a rehab assignment yet. So like, this is a conversation for another day, I suppose, but maybe the move when he gets back, if Duran is still not hitting, is one of those fake IL stints. I mean, we're definitely more used to seeing those for pitchers, but I mean, if Duran maybe could use a mental health breather, I don't know. Like, we'll see how he looks then. I don't know.
Dude, I would actually think about Estrada at this point. Like, he's not even a closer either, man.
I'm not trading Duran for a reliever. I'd rather the asset come tumbling down and get me nothing than sell on something that should be able to cash in for as much as he should be able to for just a controllable reliever. Like,
yeah,
it's just not like I get that the outfield of Roman, Rafaela, and Abreu full time and just being able to trot that out there is enticing. But
what if it's a reliever? What if it's a reliever and then like a good prospect, like not an amazing one, but like a good prospect? So then you have more trade ammo for later.
It would depend on the deal. Like,
what
I don't know.
What if it's that guy whose name is literally Boston from the Padres?
Boston Bateman.
That's a cool name.
I will say this. I'm not trading Duran unless I get a really good major league, either starting pitcher or position player, or at least a top 100 prospect. That stuff has to be there. I can't be getting a bullpen guy and a not top 100 guy. Like, that's not what I'm trading Jaren Duran for.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm just, the thing that I'm stuck on is like, does it come to the point where he's taking away playing time from guys who should be in the lineup over him, which is crazy to even think about.
It hasn't yet. It hasn't yet.
Not yet. It could. I agree. Not yet. But it's trending that way. Yeah. Hopefully he snaps out of it.
If like 2 weeks from now we're in a scenario where Bregman's back and you're now playing Yoshida at DH and Duran is taking ABs and innings away from Willier, and he's still playing like he is, then this is a different conversation. This is a much different conversation if something like that happens.
I think when that time comes, and it's a huge if, because we have these conversations all the time only to see guys get hurt. Like if we wanted to have this conversation about like Richard Fitz, who's ready to come back, bang, like Hunter Dobbins, you know, elbow injury, and now Richard Fitz is back. Like, these injuries happen all the time, and you know, there's a good chance the conversation's moot. But yeah, I mean, once you get to that point, if everyone's healthy, I don't think you roster everybody. I think you ride the hot hands, and whoever's cold gets that fake IL stint.
Oy. Red Sox love the fake IL.
Yeah. We should we got to talk Devers. I know people are sick of it, but a lot of people also are very captivated by it, and they just played him. So they played against Devers. He didn't have that great of a series. Hit the home run in the second game. I guess where we should start here is that tidbit in the Globe article where the Reds, and this is not something new, that the Red Sox wanted him to be more of a voice of the team when he was here. And it rubbed them the wrong way that he didn't do the walk-off interviews on Nesson. And come to think of it, I can literally never remember, like even before he was a star, I can't remember Devers doing them. And I know like it's not always the easiest with needing a translation, but like you'd see Yoshida do them. You see guys who need translators doing those, and Devers never did it. And clearly that upset the Red Sox. They leaked it out to the Globe that it upset them. And then first win he gets with the Giants, does the walk-off interview, gets the Gatorade bath from Willy Adames. And my question for you guys is, I understand why the first base thing changes when you get to San Francisco. You know, the Red Sox front office lied to you. The Giants front office didn't. So you don't have to prove whatever point you're trying to prove to the Giants front office with first base. So you can go play first base. I don't agree with how he handled things, but I get where his head's at least a little bit. With the walk-off interviews, I don't, because I don't understand what the Red Sox did to deserve you not being able to step up and do those things, especially when it's like after a win, the sideline reporter wants to ask you how fucking great you are. Like, it's not that hard. And he never did it with the Red Sox. And I just don't understand why that changed when he got to the Giants.
I don't know, man. I'm happy about this. It's getting to the point where I really don't even care anymore. I think that the people who questioned his character are unfortunately being proven correct. It seems petty, so petty that I don't really care about it. I don't know. The Giants, I'm sure the Giants sold him on like, look, over here, it's different. You're on the West Coast now, like less pressure. We're more chill over here. You're not in Boston. It's a friggin' beehive over there. Now you're, dude, look it over here. We're on the water. Like, come do an interview. Come on, man. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't care.
You don't feel slighted at all?
No, he's not on the Red Sox. I was too much of a coward to say this, but I kind of emotionally disconnected from Rafi when this whole thing started. Actually, I kind of started to do that when he was saying he was upset about moving off of third base. I know, Gordo, you were saying I like that he has pride and everything about his position, but I'm like, if you are in the bottom like 10% at your job, you should not have pride in that. So I emotionally kind of started to disconnect from him for a while, but I guess I didn't want people to be like, you hate him, but yeah, next time I'll speak my mind. Just think that like I've felt this way longer than most, I guess. So I'm just kind of like, whatever, man. Like, this is not my kind of ball player I like to root for. Great player. Wish he was still on the team because he's a really good player, but not one of my favorite Red Sox.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say that one thing. Spite is a hell of a thing, because we now know that he did none of what he was asked because simply he was not happy and was trying to prove a point, which is diva behavior, childish behavior. And this is one thing I did want to say. Baseball is a business. Rafi essentially got a promotion when he was given that $313 million contract. With any promotion, there are additional responsibilities. They laid it out for him. We want you to be the face of the team, be a leader. Obviously, you know, they're putting money into him. They want money out of him. Do endorsements, do ads, blah, 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 blah. Do media time, X, Y, Z. He did none of the above and actively campaigned to do the exact opposite of all they asked of him. I understand where the grudge happens. I am now in the boat that this trade absolutely had to happen. But everything that he's showing in San Francisco just further demonstrates how childish he was in Boston, because it's clearly stuff that he's willing to do because he's doing it in San Francisco. This has just been a long grudge in him being spiteful toward whether it be Craig, whether it be ownership or whoever, but it's ridiculous. And then I'm so happy that this San Francisco series is out of the way. I am done talking about Rafi. I wish him nothing but the most middling offensive career in San Francisco. I hope he racks up wall ball singles. But yeah, I'm over it.
Here, I just, Pat, you say this is a trade that absolutely had to be made because of the stuff that we hear like that. But I can't help but just think that there are people whose job it is to make sure that this relationship is okay. And, you know, clearly this is about more than a position change. Like, Rafi was sick of people in that front office. Like, he was sick of something here. Like, it was the situation here soured on him. And, you know, not for nothing. I said months ago that my opinion on Alex Cora's season, when everyone earlier in the season was saying fire AC, fire AC, fire AC, my thought on that was, AC's season will be determined by how the Devers situation is handled, how that finishes out. If he goes and plays first base and you can keep him happy, then it's a job well done by the manager, because that's not easy. He wasn't able to do that. And now we have finality to it. He got traded. So now, like, it's basically make playoffs or bust here with the manager. So, and to me, like, Pat, I know you just said it's a trade that absolutely had to be made. I can't get there. Like, I can never get behind trading your best player. And even if it was past the point of no return, fine, we don't have to get hung up on they traded the best player. We can get hung up on the stuff that led to the trade of the best player. And yeah, Raffy's in the wrong for a lot of that stuff, but who ignited that? Who lit the spark that ignited that flame? It was the team. And there's a lot of blame to be placed on their end too.
Okay, then, quick question for you guys, because I want to reference this to the last clip we put out where me, Sammy, Pat all said, we're done being fans of Devers. Gordo, you're still rooting for him. It seems like there are still people who have those rose-colored glasses on and still see Devers as squeaky clean. I'm not going to say that this is going to change their mind because I think that even makes them more dug in. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is there any more that can come out that would make fans turn on Devers the way we have so quickly? Or is this just a fan base who has seen John Henry and that ownership in front office burn them time after time after time that they're going to completely ignore all the crap that Devers has put the Red Sox through?
I want to say there aren't a lot of people that think, at least in this situation, because, like, again, I maintain my stance from last week. Like, I am a Rafael Devers fan until the end. Like, I'll root for the guy. He gave us a lot. He gave us a lot of moments, memories, all that stuff. I don't think there are many or any people that think that in this situation he was squeaky clean.
No, there are some. There's some people who, like, Rafi could, like, beat them overhead with the bat and they'd be like, well, he only did that because he was frustrated. And you have to understand from his perspective, the only way to get that frustration out was to beat me over the head with a baseball bat. So I'm not mad at him for it. There are people like that. Like, I see it on the internet. I mostly mute them, but they exist. Rose colored glasses, as you said. Not you, Gordo. Not you, no, Gordo. Just to be clear.
I know, not me. I guess, yes, you're right. There's going to be a minority of people that will always take the player's side. But I think it is really easy to see that Devers was in the wrong here. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, he was a clubhouse cancer or anything. Like, we've talked to guys in that room who say that he wasn't that and he was, like, a good teammate and things with him and his teammates were good. Like, that stuff that you hear, that you heard about that before the trade, like, we've heard that was true. I can't quite figure out how you get from that to they're also seemingly okay with him getting traded. Cause, like, my assumption after they were so okay with him getting traded is, oh, clearly there must have been problems that we didn't know about. But from what we hear, like, that's not necessarily the case. And granted, like, we hear that from some people, that doesn't mean there weren't problems with other people that we didn't talk to, but it just, again, I'll back up to the point of, was it truly untenable? Was this truly a, you can't fix it no matter what, under any circumstances, because when you're talking about a talent like Rafael Devers, you can't just grab star talent every now and then. Like, we're talking about, oh, how could they get Tatis? Oh, how could they get Acuna? Stuff like God, teams don't trade those guys. And those guys don't come up through the farm system every now and then. Like, it's hard to get those guys. So to trade it away, it better be truly to the point of no return. And maybe it was, but I don't know if I'm there.
I'm going to be thinking about this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, what would have happened if the Red Sox... I can't believe... Dude, we talked about this last episode, but it's just crazy. Three potential Hall of Famers they just let walk out the door. I don't know if you guys watched this video. Jolly Olive, a YouTuber, works with the John Boy guys. He made a video about the trade history of the Red Sox. It's like worse than I remember. I'm watching the thing. I watch, like, every Red Sox game every year for the last, like, 20 years. Like, I never miss a game. I'm obsessive with this team. This was, like, I had forgotten. Maybe my brain blocked it out, but oh my God. Great video. Great job, Jolly Olive. But it is, like, the trade history, and then he compiled it with the free agents leaving, too. Like, he touched on that. So, just nuts, man. Just it's the Boston Red Sox. And there was that article where Passan was talking about how they have this financial might that they just don't flex. And Rafael Devers is the latest victim of it. So whatever. At least they're still kind of hot right now. That's fun.
Yeah. The only other thing, I know we have to get to enough said, but how fucking funny was it that David Ortiz flipped the phone and showed the unresponded texts?
It's a little petty. A little petty.
A little.
Do you guys think he's getting paid? You think he's getting paid to do this?
Yeah, he's an employee. He's an employee of the Sox right now. He's like a special advisor.
You're not telling him to do this.
Maybe not.
No.
There. Let's, Sammy. How often do you think David fucking Ortiz sends text messages to people and doesn't get a response?
That's true.
Oh, I don't know, but like,
come on, it's never.
But that doesn't mean that Fenway Sports Group's not like, hey man, we need some good PR, man. We need some good PR. Can you do some bad PR for Rafi? Because that's good PR for us. Come on, I mean, he took undervalued contracts for years. This is not something. No, I'm not saying he's doing it. I'm just saying I don't think it's that crazy. I've seen people talking about it.
This can be the last thing on the Ortiz thing before we get to enough said. But we glossed over the best part. We glossed right over him standing with his numbers, basically calling himself a 5-tool player. That was the best part. That was awesome.
I thought that got taken out of context. I thought he meant that, like, you got to be, like, a good player. You got to be a good teammate. You got to do the media. You got to make appearances. Like, that's what I thought he meant. But it comes off the way Pat said.
Like, that's yes. what he meant, but it sure as shit came off. Like,
absolutely. Like absolutely. I don't blame people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I don't blame people for taking it that way. But that's how I thought he was talking about it. Like, you got to be a 5-tool person.
5-tool person.
Uh-oh. Yeah, here it is. Here it is.
Yeah, great all-time social media post. And again, I'm a Rafi fan, but I'm also a drama fan and very much here for the pettiness. Like, we need more drama in baseball. And the Ortiz versus Rafi drama, like the David Ortiz quotes just keep on flowing. Like, he basically called Rafi like a fat shit to someone the other day. Like, it's crazy.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
But let's do some enough said before we get out of here. Anyone want to go first?
I'll go. Yeah, sure. What should my enough said be? Polar Park, really nice. We went there on Sunday. I love the color scheme of the ballpark. It looks like it's like a modern ballpark, but it also looks kind of 90s. But how do you not have a big left field? Like a big wall in left field at Polar Park. And they talked about this on the Sox Prospects podcast, which is surprisingly difficult to say while you're doing a podcast yourself. They were saying like the lay of the land, the way that it's like, the way that the ballpark is built into the city, it would be hard. But I'm kind of like, how do you...
That's why the Green Monster exists in the first place, is because they couldn't fit Fenway Park.
Yeah, in 1912. In 1912, back when I was in school. Now it's like...
Very good. Very good.
I hear the reasoning. I'm just like, Roman Anthony should have come up and played left field, but he didn't because Cora was like, look, the monster is not, you know, I wouldn't call it a difficult left field to play, but it's a difficult left field to learn. So I don't know. Whatever. It's a fairly minor complaint, but still. I just wish they had a big wall. Like they do in Greenville and at JetBlue at the spring training. And then Portland has it backwards. Portland has like a right field big wall.
No, Portland has it in left. They've got it in left.
It's right field.
Worcester has it in right. No, it's in left. Yeah. It's in left. I know it because I watched Tim Tebow try to play a ball off the wall and it hit him in the noggin. And then Josh Ockamy got a triple out of it.
It's both.
They have it. Yeah, yeah, they have it. There you go. They have big walls in both. Big wall. We just need big walls.
Pat, you got enough said?
Yeah, I do. This is, so I went to a concert at Gillette last night. Fellas, listen to this.
Who'd you see?
Chris Stapleton and George Strait.
Oh, damn. Nice.
Yeah. I did not have to pay for parking.
What?
Oh, was it one of those things where they give you like...
I have no idea. P5 directly across from Gillette. There was people parking people. No one was taking money. Not only that, I was out of the parking lot post-concert in under 10 minutes.
Whoa.
I don't know what That's they crazy. Were on last night, but hats off, tip of the cap to everybody working in P5, because that was nuts. My girlfriend's first time going to a concert at Gillette. And I was like, we're going to be in the parking lot for like 3 hours afterward. Just a heads up. Happens.
I actively avoid Gillette Stadium because of that.
And I like got someone let me go like pull out whatever. And I'm like, this is where we're going to get stuck. Nope. State troopers just waving guys through, opened up like four lanes out. I was shocked.
And you didn't pay?
Nope. Did not pay.
Which lot, Pat? P5?
It was I'm pretty sure it's P5. So if you're... Yeah. Coming from like the South Shore, you drive past Gillette. It's right across the street from Gillette.
P5. Everybody who works in lot P5 is currently firing up Indeed.com. Yes. They all forgot to take the money.
So this is not one of those things. Because I know at Patriots games, they've got this thing now where if you park in this spot and then wait until like an hour after the game, they'll like give you a $20 gift card or something.
No. This Dude, is not I that. I... The concert started at 5:45. We got there at probably like 2:45, did not park, tailgated, went into the concert, left after the last song, and we're right on the road.
Were you nice at least to the parking guys who like led you into the spot? Were you nice?
I did that
as a summer job one time, so I was just
I will say
Joe takes offense if you're a dick to them, Pat.
I think you guys would agree. I'm a pretty nice guy. I don't
He's
really
a nice
work
guy.
Up all that bad.
He's a nice
friendly
dude.
Around me, dicks. Dicks.
Why?
So,
This was like 8 years ago my job, so I'm so cool with you shitting on him.
There was workers in the parking lot coming by on like a golf cart, and people have like their tents, grills, cornhole, like all this stuff. Set up in like the middle aisle, like in between the rows of parking, not like right outside their car. So she goes fast. They go by like, hey, it's a hot day. People are going to get dehydrated. Can you guys just move your stuff back about like 2 feet? Because we got to be able to get emergency vehicles. All of them like, oh, yeah. And then move them more into it. And we're like, she can't tell us what. I'm like, yeah, people suck, man. But yeah, I was nice. I was nice.
Nice guy, Pat.
Good guy, Pat Brown, as he's always been known. My enough said, I don't know. It was super hot today. And when it's super hot, you blast the AC to cool down your house, your apartment, wherever you live. I cannot, like, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm wearing a literal sweatshirt right now because I'm in the basement. And I cannot for the life of me figure out how to cool the upper floors of this place without freezing the downstairs, which is where.
Dude, are you sick? Are you sick? You sound sick, and you're wearing a hoodie, and it's 90 outside.
I'm a little bit under the weather, a little bit, but like it's really nothing bad. Like I feel fine. It's more so just like in my voice. But
you kind of sound like you accidentally devoured feculence.
Ooh, no!
Ah, oh, crap! Oh, that line.
I didn't have it ready. There it is.
Devour feculence.
Shit.
Yes. Oh, there we go. Beautiful timing. There we go. Dude, I can't wait to reference Severance on every episode forever now that we've all completed the show.
Yeah. So, well, so anyway, good. if you know how to cool the upper floors of a place but keep the lower floors not freezing.
I haven't seen Severance. I got to correct
Joe, watch Severance.
Joe,
watch
you got to see it. Severance.
Binge the both seasons tonight. Don't even edit this. Get rid of this whole podcast. Go watch Severance, the whole thing. It's so good. I play third.
There it is.
All right, let's wrap it.
It's like it's like Anderson Silva. Artie's my heart. Okay.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to episode, what is this, 228 of Play Tessie. Remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You know the drill. Rate 5 stars. Find us on YouTube on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up button on all the videos. Find the Playtesty playlist there. It's got all the videos. And you can find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here for the final Playtesty podcast following a Rafael Devers game against the Red Sox unless they play the Giants in the World Series. That is the drill. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.